Hi. This is the first episode of Practice in Place, Law and Justice Go Viral, a podcast that asks the question, how does a profession governed by precedent respond to the unprecedented? Practice in Place investigates how the practice of law and the administration of justice have adapted under the abrupt constraints of the COVID-19 era. How that has affected how and whether we achieve justice, and how those changes and that experience might or should change the practice, the profession, and its procedures forever. I'm Susie Solomon, clinical professor of law and director of the legal writing program at the University of Arizona's James E. Rogers College of Law. I'll be your host. In mid-March 2020, the landscape changed abruptly and dramatically for all of us. While courthouse doors remain metaphorically open, they're often literally closed. Non-essential hearings and matters are continued indefinitely. Many essential hearings occur with parties, lawyers, and even judges participating outside the courthouse via technology, whether that technology be new age or old school. Suddenly, changes that decision makers had deemed impossible, infeasible, or impracticable became imperative. Lawyers and judges work from home, sometimes while juggling childcare, homeschooling, and other household obligations at the same time. Prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, and administrators collaborate to scrutinize who really needs to be detained in our jails and prisons. Jurisdictions on a three-year plan to go paperless overnight. Different jurisdictions approach the crisis differently based on their resources, their structures, and their circumstances. In coming episodes, my colleagues and I will talk to lawyers, judges, litigants, court staff, legal staff, law professors, and other participants in and observers of our legal system. We'll hear individual stories of individual experiences practicing law, engaging with clients, presiding over a docket, making rule changes and policy decisions, and interacting with the legal system in various ways under the restrictions imposed in response to the COVID-19 crisis. Some episodes will also engage with subject matter experts who can help us put current issues in context or explore the legal and practical ramifications of emergency measures. Along the way, we'll interrogate assumptions about how we can or should practice law and deliver justice. We'll debate potential consequences of these sudden changes to rules, deadlines, and procedures. And we'll invite the profession and the system as a whole to take this opportunity to revisit conclusions, rethink processes, and recommit to finding the fairest, most humane, and most effective ways to do justice. In this first episode, my colleague, Professor Sylvia Lett, interviews Judge Lainey McDonald. Judge McDonald is the municipal court magistrate for Marana, Arizona, a town just northwest of Tucson. Marana's 1977 date of incorporation belies its long history. Several important archaeological sites near the town evidence over 4,000 years of continuous human habitation. The nearby Marana Mound Complex includes the remains of a village once inhabited by people of the Hohokam culture. The Hohokam are known for their well-developed irrigation canals, and one of those canals, one of the oldest known in North America, ran from that spot to the Santa Cruz River. The modern history of Marana is also one of farming and ranching, although in recent years, the little town has experienced rapid growth in commercial and residential development and is expected to reach a population of 50,000 this year. So before being appointed in 2015 as the first ever female town magistrate for the town of Marana, Judge Lainey McDonald had served as Marana's town prosecutor for 9 years. Judge McDonald also currently serves on an Arizona Supreme Court task force that's examining many of the same issues we explore in this podcast, how courts have responded to the crisis, and whether any of the impromptu adaptations might be worth implementing over the long term. Because of the size of her court, Judge McDonald is Miranda's only judge, and because of the nature of the cases she hears, Judge McDonald's account is in many ways an ideal one with which to launch this podcast. It sort of represents the system in microcosm and highlights the issues facing courts across the country. Difficult decisions balancing public access to essential services with the safety of everyone, challenges involving unrepresented litigants, disparate access to technology, and more. Here's Judge McDonald.
Here in Marana, we are a limited jurisdiction court, so we see civil traffic violations, town ordinance violations, criminal misdemeanors, and I issue protective orders, both intimate relationship orders of protection and injunctions against harassment. So that's what my docket normally looks like, and we do remain open during the pandemic to serve the public. I do have staff here, although it's limited staff to keep with appropriate social distancing. And we are doing everything we can to limit the public coming into the courthouse for their own safety, as well as the safety of the staff. So we're doing a lot of things telephonically, a lot of things online, using a payment drop box, you know, everything we can to limit everyone's exposure to the virus and do everything we can to keep everyone safe. So I'm not hearing very many in-person hearings right now. My typical calendar, I would do civil traffic hearings on Monday mornings. I would do contested legal hearings Monday afternoons. We would do kind of a mass calendar on Tuesdays and Wednesdays where we would have a whole bunch of people here in the courtroom.
Sounds like you have a busy docket.
Yeah. So we're not doing any of those things, actually. We are doing some telephonic pretrial conferences, long distance changes of plea, because the rules already provided for some cases to be resolved by telephonic changes of plea. So we're going ahead with those so that those people can continue to resolve their cases. I am doing protective orders telephonically at this point for the initial petition hearing. And I actually have my first contested hearing on protective order since the pandemic started set this week. So we're still trying to determine if we're going to do that over Zoom or if we are going to actually have the parties come in and just take appropriate measures to ensure everyone's safety as far as the virus goes.
The upheaval caused by the COVID-19 crisis and the isolation that comes with the stay-at-home orders has led to a surge in domestic violence cases worldwide. A significant portion of Judge McDonald's docket involves people seeking orders of protection. Here, Judge McDonald talks about changes that Arizona courts had already been implementing before the virus hit. Changes that harness technology to make it easier and safer for domestic violence victims to obtain orders of protection.
With the protective orders, another thing that has ended up working quite well in light of the current public health crisis is in January, the state of Arizona launched their online protective order portal. So anyone, anywhere in the state can now go onto the website, which is accessible through any local court or the Supreme Court's websites, and they can fill out their petition online. And there are a lot of built-in safety mechanisms, which is great. There's kind of an escape button. So if someone was to walk in the room while a person who was in danger was filling out a petition, they just hit one button and it exits out of the system and looks like they're just using Google or, you know, some normal internet site. And so the plaintiffs go through that process and then the petition is electronically transmitted to the court. And I am then holding the hearing on the petition telephonically, so the person does not have to come into the courthouse for the hearing. And if it is an intimate relationship, either a family or intimate partner relationship, those orders, if they're issued, are electronically transmitted to the serving agency, so those plaintiffs don't have to come into the courthouse at all. Mm-hmm. With injunctions where it's, you know, a neighbor dispute or someone that the individual doesn't know, those are not electronically transmitted. So the plaintiff would have to come into the courthouse just to pick up a copy and deliver it to the serving agency. But it's still a lot less in-person contact than there was back in the days of paper, where someone was coming into the courthouse, filling out the paperwork, turning it in, having a hearing. You know, so I definitely think it's a safer and very effective way to make sure that we can still provide that service to the public.
That's wonderful. Have you seen a change in numbers since the pandemic began?
You know, that's something that I have been paying attention to. And we do a good number of protective order hearings on a weekly basis here to begin with. So I wouldn't say that the numbers have gone up dramatically, but they certainly haven't tapered off either. I am definitely still doing a few petitions a week.
Professor Lett also asked Judge McDonald about other new ways the court was using technology to serve the public remotely and any potential issues that may arise.
So it sounds like you had already done a lot of stuff, well, not a lot, but some stuff telephonically. Mm-hmm. And now it's just more the face-to-face hearings, whether or not people can employ Zoom. Are there any security concerns with Zoom or?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there are. Obviously, we've seen that it's not a perfect system. The thing about the court is the majority of things that we do are public record anyway. We would be audio recording them and we would provide those recordings to the public at their request. Mm-hmm. So if we have some people listening in on Zoom that weren't invited, in reality, it's an open court and that's not a crisis. We certainly would hate for them to be interfering, you know.
Right. That's a terrific point. That's
But we are open to the public. So as far as encryption and that sort of thing for these types of hearings, that's not a concern for us.
Not only does Judge McDonald have experience on the front lines serving the public during the pandemic, she's also involved in statewide efforts by the judicial branch to learn as much as possible from the experience and to use these lessons learned to improve how the system serves the public in the future.
Actually, I'm serving on a task force with the Supreme Court to kind of look at the lessons learned from this, and both in terms of what can we do better if something like this was to happen in the future, but also what are we doing because of the pandemic that are things that we should keep doing, you know, because things like this, the silver lining is you do learn a little bit more about your capabilities and what you can do under pressure. And some of those things are of benefit. You know, it's certainly much easier for a plaintiff in an order of protection to call the court, you know, from their car or, you know, from the safety of their office, you know, rather than having to come to the courthouse and possibly miss work or, you know, not be able to have childcare or something like that. So that's something that I intend to bring up with the Supreme Court and say, you know, we're doing these petition hearings telephonically right now. It's working great. Nobody has to come to the courthouse. It's easier for the plaintiff. It's more efficient for us. So why not keep doing that? You know, so those are certainly discussions that are going to be had statewide as to what people are doing because of the pandemic that's actually working really well that we may want to carry forward. But it's going to require some rule changes. Right now we have a kind of a temporary, you get to break the rules rule to keep everyone safe. And if these were going to be permanent changes, there would have to be some changes in the Supreme Court rules as well.
What percentage of people are represented by counsel that come before you? It seems like if you're doing the civil traffic stuff, maybe, you know, people would be pro se. So
yeah, we have a very, very high unrepresented population here in our court. We do have attorneys once in a while on civil traffic hearings, you know, more often on criminal misdemeanor cases. We do appoint counsel in criminal misdemeanors, either when it's in the interest of justice or if somebody's liberty is in jeopardy. So higher or any sort of jail sentence, DUIs, have mandatory jail. There are some other offenses that do. So we certainly do see attorneys, but we see a lot more unrepresented defendants and parties than we do represented. So that is something that has to kind of stay top of mind with us as well. The communications that we're putting out, we need to make sure that they're understandable by the population in general, they understand what we're doing, and they're not being confused by the current state of affairs.
Have you had a high number of kind of no-shows with the public thinking, well, this is my court date, but now we're in the middle of a pandemic and
right
off?
So, yes and no. We really are continuing everything at this point on the court's own motion. So people who aren't appearing aren't getting in trouble for not appearing. You know, they're not, I'm not issuing warrants right now. Even if you had a court date and you didn't show up, I'm not issuing a warrant. And that's sort of twofold. One, we want to keep the jail population down as much as possible because jails are a hotbed for things like this to spread. And two, you know, we understand that people are in crisis and we are going to work with people to the best of our ability to get them into court when it's safe to address their cases rather than just piling up, you know, the crises on top of crises.
Yeah. Speaking of keeping people safe, how is it going in terms of just the mental health of your staff, of you? How is everyone, you know, handling this?
It's a struggle. You know, it's interesting. For me, we're a one judge court. So, any administrative decisions that are made, ultimately, you know, they fall on me. I do have a fantastic court administrator who I think through a lot of things with, and we work very collaboratively, but in the end, you know, it's what my decisions are. And having to have my staff come into the office, you know, and be here, that weighs on me, you know, and I understand that I've tried to really convey to my staff, we are public servants, you know, and that's the work that we signed on for. And, you know, we get great benefits. They take great care of us here. And sometimes we have to put ourselves out there, you know, in a way that other people aren't expected to do. But it definitely weighs on me. God forbid somebody here got sick because of their time here. I would feel awful, you know, and that's certainly something that I think about and why we're doing absolutely everything we can to limit the amount of staff in the office. We have two separate shifts that aren't commingling so that if one person did get sick, we would have a backup shift to come in. You know, we've tried to do a lot to keep people safe.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I've been hearing about a lot of companies and things doing kind of a week on, a week off.
Yep.
Have you seen any barriers to the access to justice, to the courthouse that worry you?
You know, I think overall access is good right now, you know, if you consider the time of crisis. I think a lot of the same things about courts going virtual are a concern as to schools. You know, there are households that do not have multiple electronic devices or do not have consistent internet access or something like that. So it's something that we need to be very conscious of. We can't just expect that people are going to be able to interact with us electronically or virtually. So any solutions that we've kind of come up with in the short term need to be very carefully analyzed if we were to apply them in the long term to make sure that we're not, you know, causing less access. And in our attempt to cause greater access, actually right, restricting it because of people's resources. So that's something that we're trying to be cognizant of now and definitely looking towards the future as well.
Just even with your staff, I'm thinking of the last time I was down at court. I think I was getting my passport renewed or something,
right,
and just that face to face. Because you know, although the court staff cannot give legal advice, just being able to ask questions and not do it all over the phone, and it has to be just a very different dynamic.
It is. It's absolutely different, and I have to really praise my staff because they're doing a really good job of helping people on the phone, you know, and answering questions, being very compassionate, empathetic. You know, we're granting lots of extensions on payment plans and just telling people, you know, take care of yourselves. You know, we're not here to punish you at this point in time. You know, maybe later on down the road, if you're convicted, there's some aspect of punishment that will happen, but we're not here to make matters worse. You know, we're doing our best to work with people and ensure that they can stay safe, we can stay safe, and we can ride this out and hopefully get back to business. Probably not as usual before, you know, there will definitely be some changes, but back to serving the public in our normal face-to-face capacity before long.
I've heard of other courts, you know, other judges saying, you know, no, we're basically closing up shop. How did you decide to make the decision to keep everything open and running as normally as possible?
So, you know, as it is in the law, and this is a law school, so no better time, a lot of it is how you read it, you know, and your interpretation. And, you know, the Chief Justice's administrative order says the courts of Arizona remain open to serve the public. So in my mind, that doesn't mean that you have to ring a bell or knock on a door. That means our door is open. And our door is literally open so that you don't have to touch it on your way in. And we're here, you know, we're here to serve the public that we're tasked with serving every day. We're trying to do it as safely as possible for both our staff and the public. But the last thing we want is someone sitting at home going, oh my God, I don't know what I'm supposed to do about my case. And I don't know how I'm going to put food on my table and this, that, and the other. You know, if we can put them at ease about one little thing that they have going on in their lives, that's what we're here to do.
Judge McDonald's narrative introduces a thread that runs through so many of the conversations we've had with judges, attorneys, and others who work in the legal system. That strong sense of duty. And also just how much these human beings care about the individuals and the communities they serve. Look, lawyers get a bad rap, but so many of the stories you'll hear on this podcast share a common theme. Flawed human beings working hard, thinking creatively, and caring passionately about how to achieve justice and do right by the people who need their help. And you'll repeatedly hear throughout this podcast the hope that once the immediate crisis has passed, we can continue to harness the creativity, collegiality, and collaborative spirit to make justice more accessible for everyone. Thank you so much to Judge Lainey McDonald for taking the time to talk with Professor Sylvia Lett for this first episode of our podcast. Please look for future episodes of Practice in Place on the Arizona Law website at law.arizona.edu and wherever you listen to podcasts. We hope to continue providing a window into how the COVID-19 crisis has impacted our courts and the practice of law, and also to sharing our insights into what the response to the crisis tells us about the past, present, and future of our courts and the legal profession. Until next time, thanks.